In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone.
But we can't ignore the math, okay? We can't ignore the data.
Go on Google Trends, type in your name, then type in mine. You're a straight line. I'm a pyramid.
I like the very direct question on that.
Television ratings, downward spiral. Buy rates, plummeting.
The time is now to turn the math around.
Hello, everybody. It is John Pollock, joined by Brandon Thurston. It is Slammiversary week. It's also G1 week. It's also UFC 318 week. I mean, there's always something happening the weekend ahead of us. But how are you, Brandon? How is Buffalo, New York?
It's fine. It's very hot. It's about 90 degrees right now, Fahrenheit. That's real hot. Celsius, too, I'm sure. It's all right. It was a big weekend this past weekend. And I heard you were even trying to spoil. You're trying to spoil some upcoming events for WWE. Is that true?
Oh my gosh! Yes, it's been it's been a wonderful reception. So,
for did I get a strong reception for that?
I don't read mentions, so I'm sure it's I'm sure many people are using my name in only the highest pristine ways online as always. But yes, there was a spot on Saturday night's main event involving Seth Rollins, where everybody was very concerned that the man had blown out his knee here on live television. And that is the story that Seth Rollins actually just commented on the Rich Eisen show, that he does not have a full diagnosis of the injury, but he thinks it's bad and he's going to be out for the foreseeable future.
Now, it's a shoot. He's saying it's a shoot. Did he say the word shoot?
That's what he is saying. Now, unfortunately, I cannot unwind time and divorce the fact that 2 days prior I was told to look out for an injury angle involving Seth Rollins on Saturday, and that is what I've reported. I was told this on Thursday, that happened on Saturday. So do I believe that he injured himself in that moment on Saturday against LA Knight? I do not, and that is my story.
You're doubting his injury?
Yes,
you're doubting a man's injury.
Now
you're doubting the words of a pro wrestler.
A lot. As always, there is a lot of various interpretations of all of this. There are the thoughts of, oh, well, maybe he was hurt going into this match. I did not hear anything about an injury going into this match. Could that have been the case? Possible, but I was not told that at all. So I was told injury angle coming up, and that's what I saw on Saturday, and that is what I believe happened. And, you know, it's been a very calm response afterward, and that is that.
See what happens.
It's probably like your week when you noted that WrestleMania was moving locations.
Let it play out. We'll see if Paul Levesque comes out and does a big speech on Friday.
Yeah, we'll find out if he does another hostage video where he can come out and just encourage everybody to New Orleans another year. We'll be coming back eventually, but we are coming out of All In Weekend / WWE overtaking Atlanta for the weekend, or did they? They had to compete with Major League Baseball, Beyonce, a lot of things going on in Atlanta this past
weekend. Who won the weekend? Beyonce. Beyonce won the weekend. I think she drew the biggest crowds by far. She drew huge crowds each night to Mercedes-Benz Stadium, well outdrawing anything that AEW or WWE came close to this past weekend.
So there you go. If you just clicked on this show for the title, that is your answer, everyone. Okay, so Beyonce wins the weekend. Brandon, did you take in any of the 20-plus hours that WWE and AEW pumped out over the last week?
Well, I haven't had a chance. I've heard the AEW show just ended just before we came to air here, so I haven't had a chance to watch that yet. I did watch the main event of Evolution, and that's it, I think.
That's the one match you took in all weekend long.
Yes, there was a request in my home to watch that match, so we watched that match.
Well, let's start with AEW All in Texas. What are the what was the final WrestleTix number that we got a week ago? Tony Khan had stated that they were approaching a $3 million gate. We have been told through a very high up official at AEW, stating that they did in fact hit the $3 million mark for their gate at Globe Life Field.
Yeah. The last estimate distributed from WrestleTix was 25,671. So if the gate was around 3 million, that comes out to you can figure about an average ticket price of 130, which is based on what Tony Khan said earlier in the week, that adds up. You can get to, knocking off about 10% for comps, and you can get to a roughly $3 million gate, doing the math that way.
I didn't see the press conference, but he did state afterwards that when all is said and done, he feels the number would be around 29,000. We will see if we get a actual finalized number. It does bring up the question for I know at sometimes.
What about like the turnstile count?
Well, I mean, those are the two words I think they are.
I did. Now before everybody gets to
get it out there. Up. Get it out there. Put all right. The heat now on Brandon. Okay, I've worn it for the last 3 days. Now you can take it over.
Put your phones down. Stop tweeting me. I have called. I called the police, okay? I called the police.
You called 911?
No. I called the non-emergency number. I called the media relations representatives at the Arlington Police Department, who have given us turnstile counts in the past for WrestleMania 32 in 2016. And I said, you've done this before. Do it again. We need the turnstile count for this, or whatever attendance information you may have for this event. And they said, I'll read you exactly what one Tim Ciesco, media relations representative for the Arlington Police Department, wrote back to me. He said, hi, Brandon, we would refer you to AEW for specific attendance figures you're looking for, because AEW loves to give me specific numbers. Our department does not tabulate or track those numbers. Whenever we host an event at one of our stadiums, organizers will provide us with a general estimate for attendance so that we can determine the appropriate police staffing levels for the event. I can tell you the estimate for this event was between 25,000 and 30,000. But for more specifics, you would need to contact AEW.
Okay. So we've got a range at least. I'm curious though, if when they hit that email, like an alarm goes off, it's like the Brandon Thurston alarm.
Yes. I don't know. I mean, they gave me information in the past. And again, the language here is the estimate for this event was between 25,000 and 30,000. That's consistent with WrestleTix. Maybe they're just watching WrestleTix. There are different flavors of attendance, of course. There is the number of tickets distributed, which is what WrestleTix estimates. There is the number of tickets sold. There are the number of tickets that are scanned, aka the turnstile count, which is always at least lower than the number of tickets distributed.
Yeah, WrestleTix, it's a combination of sold tickets, complimentary tickets as well. I mean, typically, like the rough estimate we go with is, 10% comps for shows. You might get a little more, a little less for shows, but like 10% is like a decent estimate here, unless somebody wants to just.
And what about the records requests? A colleague of ours has already alerted me that he has performed a records request and it has been responded to already, but they do not have any all in attendance information.
I looked at this as a big success for the show a $3 million gate is a tremendous number for them to hit. To put that into perspective, like that did outdraw the Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano fight at Madison Square Garden on Friday night. Yes, stadium versus arena. We're talking about what was a major event on Friday night at Madison Square Garden. And the fact is like AEW, I think that's one thing is that they put on a show like this. I would be holding the all-time, victory lap after a show like this and touting these numbers to every single outlet possible to make it known that we drew 25,000 plus $3 million gate. I put the pay-per-view number out there. I mean, this is all, I would say, stuff that is, I think reflects very strongly on AEW on a weekend where they had a lot thrown at them and they produced what will be one of their biggest shows of all time. It will probably not be the biggest all time, at least not compared to the Wembley shows or maybe even pay-per-view wise, but it's a gigantic success, I would say, from where tickets went on sale 11 months ago for this event. And I don't know if everyone thought it would culminate in a show such as this.
Yeah, and to be clear, you've been informed by an AEW source that it did reach 3 million. That's not something we're
that is what I was told by AEW.
Okay, and I did look at like everything that WrestleTix has estimated just to get some idea of what the progression of tickets distributed is like for people watching in video. And I mean, if you compare it to some of the other events of the weekend, I guess these are it's not a great x-axis to look at, but there is a noticeable uptick, especially in the last few days, to get to just over 25,000. So this isn't like an exponential curve, but there was some decent growth towards the end.
Where do you look at, you know, for AEW, do you feel that there is enough here for a big show like this, that there is positive momentum coming out of this show? I mean, they now go into this 6-night residency in Chicago. I mean, it's a, you know, they're running
the pretty small crowds here. So how many shows are they doing in Chicago?
They're doing 6 at the Aragon Ballroom. It's not a gigantic venue that they are running for this residency. But that's going to be the question is, I think, number one is how this show did on pay-per-view. That's a major factor in all of this, if it reflects the other metrics attached to the show. And if they take this and there is a trickle-down effect to their live events coming out of this show, and if they can kind of ride something with all the positivity that seemed to be derived from this show over the weekend and the lead up to it that generally was very well received.
Yeah. I mean, since especially say Q2 of this year, there has been a stabilization of certain consumer metrics, including TV viewership, even though we know that Max is out there and there's another way to watch the show beyond traditional TV and attendance. Dynamite numbers have flattened out and even kind of gone up over time in the last several months. So the narrative of the last 2 years to me has been WWE up and AEW down. And we're finally seeing, I would say WWE has maybe sort of plateaued in some of its metrics. You can talk about TV and that gets complicated. But we're seeing AEW tick up a bit after a couple of years of pretty steady decline in terms of fan interest. It's a long show. This was the longest show, wrestling show, I don't know, of a major pay-per-view of all time. We do have a chart here, this one to share. And I've even made a second chart, this one, to show that this was an 8-hour show. Did you watch all 8 hours of this?
Well, the 0 hour was 2 hours, the first of which was, it was pretty much just all features and interviews. So, okay. Like wrestling, it was like 7 hours all together with like the second hour of 0 hour, which I mean, maybe that's a pre-show that needs to be updated. I mean, it's 0 hours, would it not be? And then, a 6 hour pay-per-view.
6 hour main show. So I went to Triller and I scraped all of their listings for pay-per-views and got all of this information as well as some of the pre-show information. And this was a 6 hour main show. And there's never been anything like this, even in these AEW shows that are historically pretty long. Like, I don't think there's none that are 3.5 or under. You know, most of them are 4. I know we got All Out 2019 was 5 hours. Does that sound right? And so that had been, I suppose, the longest one, Double or Nothing of last year, going with a pre-show just over 6 hours, but 8 hours. But it was okay. Main show, 6 hours. That's asking a lot of your fans, isn't it? Even if this is a great show, which I understand we can talk about it too. Like, this was a really well-received show. If you look at Cage Match, just for one example, which has got 500 votes here, it's a 9.1, which is a really good Cage Match rating among the diehards here. But that is a long time to do anything. 8 hours.
It was a long show, but, you know, that crowd, like the last three matches, like that crowd was with those final three matches. They went with Toni Storm, Mercedes Moné, followed that with the Okada Omega rematch. And then like the peak of the show, like that explosion for Paige's win, like you can't say you burned this crowd out. Like, there was a middle portion of the show right after Adam Cole's announcement that he was out for the time being that it did seem to kind of take the life out of the crowd. And it did keep them down for a little while and then picked up in the tag title match, or the straight tag with Swerve and Ospreay against the Young Bucks. But I mean, I am the first to complain about lengthy shows, and this was a long one, but I would say overall, I don't think it was, the time did not serve as a detriment to people's enjoyment of the show. But when we were talking last week, like we were discussing, like, is there any chance this bleeds into Saturday night's main event? It went up against the whole first hour of Saturday night's main event. So you did have that first hour going against Okada Omega and the Hangman Page, John Moxley, Texas Death Match, because this show didn't end till around 9 p.m. Eastern time.
And we do have half hours from Programming Insider. So if we look at, say, the first hour of Saturday Night's Main Event, where they did 1.47 in the first half hour, and then they did 1.39 in the second half hour, and does it grow after that? Not really. 1.36, and then for the end with Goldberg, it gets up to 1.47 million. So you don't see an obvious impact, I would say, there from all in. I mean, it was a pay-per-view. It's not as if it was on traditional TV.
Yeah, we'll get into the Saturday Night's main event rating in a minute, because there were some interesting things coming out of that as well. But it does segue to the WWE's overall strategy this weekend. I mean, this was going to be AEW running a Saturday night all-in event from Texas. Then it was the addition of Saturday night's main event. So AEW pivoted, moving their card earlier in the day to an afternoon start time. Great American Bash pops up. That would run head-to-head with all-in. And then on top of it, adding a third show that weekend with Evolution on Sunday, leaving Brandon with the decision, there is one match I will watch all weekend long between these four events, and it would be on a Sunday night. So final numbers that we had, again, courtesy of WrestleTix, was Great American Bash at 729 tickets distributed at Center Stage. And then for the two shows at State Farm Arena, Saturday night's main event, 12,350. And then the next night, which did have the Beyonce concert going against it at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, which Saturday did not contend with, Evolution getting up to 8,303, which earlier in the week was under 5,000. So I don't know what the paid breakdown was. I mean, it's very rare you see a pickup like that without certain, like, buy one, get one free or comps. But I mean, it certainly looked respectable in the building by the time we got there. And Evolution overall, I would say, was like the best WWE show of the weekend, and seemed to get a pretty positive response, especially the two matches that bookended that pay-per-view.
I mean, this is a big jump from the 11th to the 13th of about 2,000 tickets distributed. To compare that to Saturday Night's Main Event, I guess you could say, well, maybe it was just virtually sold out at that point. That explains that. But one of the big takeaways that I had was reviewing the graphics, the promotional materials for this NXT show. Whereas, you know, in the past, since Halloween Havoc or so, this is not an NXT show. This is not NXT Halloween Havoc. This was WWE Halloween Havoc. This was not NXT Deadline. This was WWE Deadline. This is not NXT Vengeance. This was WWE Vengeance. Then did Stand and Deliver. There is an X in the background of this poster, but this was WWE Stand and Deliver, okay? And then there was WWE Battleground, not NXT Battleground. But this show was obviously branded NXT Great American Bash as it went head-to-head with AEW All In, which I thought was... I didn't realize that until this afternoon, looking at some stuff, and I said, oh,
got the double branding here. WWE NXT The Great American Bash. That just sounds grammatically very incorrect. No, it's WWE NXT The Great American Bash Atlanta.
Yes. So you may have had a bigger show than us on that day, but it wasn't, you didn't beat a WWE show, okay? You beat an NXT show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, all you can go through, like, again, we don't get any kind of meaningful result of what did this NXT show produce for WWE that would be a valid comparison point to its oppositional pay-per-view. So it's very low risk possibility of a reward for the Great American Bash. It's our C brand. It's not something that is going to have any viewership stats attached to it. It's just an event that is thrown out there as, you know, it's opposition, and it's something that we were willing to throw against this very, very big card from AEW. And it's like, no harm, no foul if you're NXT. But this one, to me, was just buried in the sea of shows over the weekend that you heard nothing coming out of, nothing at the level of, you know, the other three shows between AEW and WWE that weekend.
But I think it is interesting to think about how they've clearly in the last year or so made a decision when they do these PLEs for NXT, they've decided not to use the NXT branding, as if to say, no, 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 this is not a minor league show that you should, you know, let pass by. It's a WWE show that you need to see, except for, well, now on the, on one hand, you could say this Battleground show did go against Double or Nothing, right? And they still did the same non-NXT branding here. But for this one, I don't know, maybe because it was going against AEW's biggest show of the year, they decided to, you know, really obviously branded as NXT. And they are going back to just WWE Heatwave as they go head-to-head with Forbidden Door on August 24th.
Well, this is also part of the game now. Is AEW, to my understanding, at least on the pay-per-view, they promoted Forbidden Door, but they have yet to release a start time for this show. You're presuming it's going to be an afternoon show since it's at the O2 Arena in London.
So I can buy tickets to Forbidden Door, but I don't get to know what time it starts at?
That's my understanding, that they have not put out the time yet. And correct me if I'm wrong there. Heatwave will be an evening show in Lowell, Massachusetts. So we do know that these will be running on the same day. And we will see what the extent of the crossover is. But I think it's almost less about just the direct head-to-head. I think it's like the strategy is just of a lot of fans. It's going to be picking one show over the other. And I think part of it, too, is going to be the fact of, are you going to spend $50 for what will probably be an excellent wrestling show, but it's also going to be, you know, a sizable part of your day versus, you know, your Peacock subscription gives you an NXT event. And for some people, maybe that's the fill that they want out of their day. 2.5 hours is what they're willing to spend. And if it results in like 10% of people that opt to not buy an AEW pay-per-view, that's enough for us. Like, it's not as though we're, you know, mortgaging too much of our business to put this show on head to head. Like, all it is chipping away. And I think everyone is becoming savvy to what the purpose of these NXT PLEs are becoming now as oppositional tools.
So we do have a start time here listed of 1800, which is 1 p.m. Eastern time. That do see similar on the Live Nation.
Okay.
So the sales website.
Because they didn't list the time when they promoted, when they had the ad on the pay-per-view. But yeah, 1 o'clock, you would think that they would not be running that show past 7 o'clock Eastern time, I would hope.
Right. I don't know that there's a start time yet for Heatwave, but I will look while we talk here.
I had seen like Doors 6:30 or so. So you would think like a 7 o'clock start time, which would be the usual one. But I guess everything is time subject to change. Well, coming out of the weekend, Brandon, I mean, do you feel like this is going to be something that we revisit? Like, was this weekend the extent of this whole strategy, something that is going to be replicated on a fairly often basis? And what do you see as, like, if you are AEW, are you going with the idea that this is going to be what you're going to have to contend with for most of your shows?
I would think so. Yeah, I would expect it. I would expect them to put an NXT show opposite your pay-per-views whenever they, you know, whenever it's not terribly inconvenient, or maybe even when it's kind of inconvenient for them to do so. They did it with Double or Nothing, and I think that, you know, they're going to do it with Forbidden Door, and I expect them to continue to do that, especially with NXT. That's kind of been the strategy since 2019, is to take this product that's, you know, it's, as you said, it's limited risk. If they beat us, well, if they just beat our minor league, if we beat them, our minor league is better than them.
Yeah, and like, what even is defined as beating them? Like, what are we even judging this by?
Spin, I don't know. Yeah. Like, however we can spin it.
Like, you're coming out of it, and it's like anyone can come up with their own conclusion. Like, are we comparing show quality? Are we comparing, like, buzz online and Google Trends? Like, where we don't even have, like, a way.
Or just anything defensively that you can do to, you know, bring their pay-per-view buys down a little bit.
Wow. I think that's probably the goal, is just to, like, it's not about one weekend. It's about a prevailing strategy of just chipping away and putting obstacles in front of AEW. And it's one that, okay, one weekend they do well. They're not always going to have their biggest show of the year. And there are going to be other examples where maybe it does get hurt more. Like, does WWE put at some point like a main roster PLE against one of these shows? Like, how far in do they go in terms of, you know, forcing the fan to pick one over the other, and what is going to make the biggest dent? We know what happens when a Collision goes up against a WWE show. It is a different case when you have your big stadium show of the year.
Yeah, I don't see them ever going out of their way to put their biggest show, to put a main roster pay-per-view PLE against AEW, because there's too much to get impacted there, right? That's why NXT is sort of the perfect bulwark. If it impacts you, it impacts one of your biggest products as opposed to your minor league product.
It would have been like AEW opting to stay on Saturday night. It's like, yes, we are standing up to this tactic, but we're harming ourselves by doing that. And I think that is where, you know, you are in this competition, but if it's going to hurt your own product, that's the point you probably, for both companies, don't want to be venturing into.
You know, across my mind was, you know, looking at the length of All In, maybe that was a calculated strategy on AEW's part to exhaust the wrestling fans, to give them an 8-hour show to watch throughout Saturday so that they were so full of wrestling by that point, they didn't want to watch Saturday's main event. They wouldn't want to watch W Evolution, much like, WF running like Nashville all night the night before WrestleWar 89, so that the wrestling fans would be so tired in Nashville, they wouldn't want to go to the pay-per-view tomorrow.
That happened here once in Toronto in 1999. WWF ran, not that they ran way into the late hours of the night, but they had a big house show at the Sky Dome. They used to run house shows at the Sky Dome here. And then it was the night before a WCW pay-per-view at the Air Canada Center the next day. And it was very, very similar.
It's like before the Mayhem show, the late 90s one?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah,
still at that point. Wow, okay.
Yeah, WWF ran a really big house show the night before. Okay, let's talk about the rating for... Let's start with Saturday night's main event. It was the most interesting number of the past week. They ended up doing 1,425,000 viewers and a 0.33 in the 18 to 49 demo on NBC. This doesn't include the streaming information on Peacock. It was down 28% from the May 24th edition of Saturday night's main event, which did a 0.54 in the demo. That was the show that featured John Cena wrestling and a cage match with Drew McIntyre and Damian Priest. What was an interesting number was males 18 to 49 from that May show, which was the biggest Saturday night's main event they've done in this current iteration of the brand. Males 18 to 49 were down 56% from May. And do you look at that as just May was that much bigger of a show? Like, that's the one category do you look at as anything that an AEW put even a dent into that particular demographic? Or is that stretching things too much in AEW's favor?
It could be. And I think we do have, we don't have breakdowns by gender. No, we just by age. It could be. I mean, like, Goldberg's retirement match should be pretty big, right? That seems like a big event, especially when you think about how big, say, Sting's retirement was for AEW. You'd think, you know, the retirement of Goldberg would be a big deal, but...
And that was the peak in overall viewership, and the demo was the final half hour of the show. So, I mean, and AEW was over by the second hour. So that was, they had all the fans coming out of that particular period. I don't know, for like the Goldberg match, Goldberg obviously wanted a much more heavily promoted show. He was a...
Goldberg's not happy.
Not mincing any words, he was not too impressed with the whole treatment of his retirement and going off the air very quickly into his speech. But I think it went as well as you probably could have hoped for, save for a shortened speech. But that's just the realities of being on a network broadcaster that is not going to be interrupting its affiliate programming for Bill Goldberg's closing speech. But it was certainly not like a great Saturday night's main event number, but it was also coming off a gigantic one that they did in May that I think Cena deserves a lot of credit for that number. And depending on what they do, they're going to do four of these a year. So three are in the bank and they'll do one more this year. Like, this was in line with like the first two in essence. Yeah. It's just,
well, remember, this is the fourth, right? Because they did this December 14th, 2024 one.
Right. They did December, January, May, and this would be the fourth one. But they will do four this year, I believe.
Right. Right. It's quarterly.
So like, this was just in line with like the first couple. And then May was just so high that the drop off was significant when you're comparing.
I mean, this was in the demo. This did exactly what the January one did. But in terms of total viewership, this was the lowest one, slightly lower than the one in January.
So that was the Saturday night's main event data for the particular week. We can also go over SmackDown here while we're at it, ratings-wise. 1,399,000 viewers and a 0.37 in the demo, which is up from a 0.32. The prior week was the 4th of July holiday. Not that this week's number was gigantic either, but in the latest on the state of television, a 0.32, that was good enough to be first on television in the demo on Friday night.
Yeah, and it beat out some sports as I have it up here. It beat out baseball on Fox. Mm-hmm. Their nemesis now, Fox, beat baseball, as well as UFC, which is on cable, right, with the fight night, or is it prelims?
Saturday was the UFC card.
What am I thinking? Okay. I'm thinking Saturday's main event was also number one in the demo.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
So that's what they had going up against them on Friday. On Friday as well was the Katie Taylor Amanda Serrano fight at Madison Square Garden. This aired on Netflix. So back in November, they were on the undercard of Jake Paul and Mike Tyson, and the famous numbers that came out from Netflix, they attributed the Serrano Taylor fight was watched by 50 million people, according to Netflix, back in November. So this time around, they made it an all-women's card from Madison Square Garden, and Taylor and Serrano would be the headline attraction. So we did get a press release with Netflix and VideoAmp. Do you want to explain VideoAmp, Brandon?
VideoAmp is like Nielsen, but better if you're trying to get a higher number. We do have one like-to-like measurement. I believe it's the Golden Globes. While Paramount was on the outs with Nielsen, they did have VideoAmp measure the Golden Globes, and then the Golden Globes were also measured by Nielsen. The difference was Nielsen measured it about 8% lower than VideoAmp did. And we know that VideoAmp measured, what was it? Was it 4.9 million viewers? I'll look it up, for the debut of Raw on Netflix in the U.S. live the same day.
It was 5.9 million global viewers globally for the debut of Raw. So they put out this press release, and they only gave us data for the main event between Taylor and Serrano. This was like a 4.5 hour stream on Netflix. So I don't imagine the undercard was garnering a ton of attention in comparison to the main event. But the average minute audience
for Raw, for Raw in the U.S. it was 2.6 million households, which I figured if you say there's 1.3 or 1.4 people per household watching, that gets you to about 3.6 million viewers. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay, gotcha. So the average minute audience, they stated, was nearly 6 million live plus one global viewers for the main event from the opening to closing bell. And they also gave a audience of 4.2 million viewers in the U.S. for, again, the main event from opening bell to closing bell. And so that is our comparison point. So this fight would have been, they're saying, nearly 6 million. So it would basically be in the same neighborhood of that first episode of Raw at the Intuit Dome, which again was 5.9 million global viewers that Netflix pumped out.
So they're saying 6 million viewers worldwide. Imagine the vast majority of that is going to be live, right? But then they put in their top 10 list 2.8 million global views, which is more comparable to households, because that's just looking at accounts. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about almost an average of two people watching per account, I guess, something like that. So I guess that's believable. Yeah.
Yeah. It ranked first on Netflix in Ireland. It also ranked in the US, Australia, New Zealand among the 43 countries that it ranked in. So, and this did a gate of 2.63 million at Madison Square Garden as well. So, I did watch this fight on Friday night. I assume you were not watching this this boxing event.
I was not watching. I did see the first fight, though.
You watched the first fight? Okay.
Well, the one on the one under Jake
Paul. Oh, sorry. I thought you meant the first fight of the night on Friday. You were tuning in for the prelims. No, I understand what you mean. Okay, those were your boxing report, everybody, for Netflix comparisons. So next, we're going to move on to this this analysis that came your way, Brandon. Do you want to give any setup to this?
JP Morgan put out an almanac on sports rights, which is like a 100 and some odd page PDF. If you have a Chase, a JP Morgan Chase stock account, even if you put nothing in it, you can get access to this report. It'll be exclusively for you, though. Mm. And it's got a lot of really good information. It's written by David Karnofsky, who also covers W Stock, TKO Stock. and has done so for a number of years. So a familiar person to avid viewers and listeners of TKO earnings calls.
So I did go through this. It goes through pretty much every major sports league or promotion out there, including the WWE and UFC. We'll focus on the WWE. And there were some interesting takeaways here. They went through like what are the, you know, the estimated value of all of WWE's media deals with Raw on Netflix, SmackDown on the USA Network, NXT on CW, and the PLEs on Peacock, which is what they are kind of looking upon as the next big deal for WWE to negotiate once their deal is up in March with Peacock. Anything in terms of this that was, I mean, a lot of these figures, they were out there already. Nothing that was too striking in terms of the value of these deals.
Yeah, no, this is right to me. All these numbers, we know about half a billion. He's got 520 million AAV for the Netflix deal, which I think is something that TKO has said. It's not just 500 million AAV. It's 520 million AAV, 25 million for NXT, 287 for SmackDown. That's what CNBC and I believe Wall Street Journal both reported at the time when that deal was announced, and 200 for the deal on Peacock, which is what was reported when that deal was announced. And they see, so he sees incremental interest, a little bit of extra interest for the PLE deal, which is going to be expired less than a year from now. So could be a deal, you know, could be a deal being made at just about any time. Whether it be Netflix, whether it be Peacock, you know, when we had Richard Deitch on here a few months ago, he feels like, you know, Peacock probably not likely to renew, but it would make a lot of sense for Netflix to go after it. He also explores the idea of ESPN and even Paramount Plus.
Yeah, they even threw out like Disney here as like a wild card in all of this. That seems like a tough fit to imagine with yes. WWE, but I guess you know, their argument was with ESPN's upcoming direct to consumer streaming app that they're going to be launching, like they'd be looking for content of this.
Amazon variety. Is mentioned, which makes some sense.
Yeah, it was also noted here that given Netflix also supplanted the WWE Network where it was still available, it's reasonable as well to compare against the terminal value, that revenue stream, which we estimate at $45 million annually. So to break down this language here, and Brandon, you spoke about this a lot when the Netflix deal was first announced, was a lot of the comparisons we saw was to the NBC Universal deal that Netflix was replacing, and not necessarily taking into account that Netflix was also getting all of these international territories as well. That does, like their argument here in the JP Morgan thing is, yes, that is accounted for, but there is also a great value kind of in streamlining their international process and being on Netflix worldwide, that even with the loss of other linear networks that were paying rights fees for WWE internationally.
Yeah. And so the increase that he gets to from the 265 million for Raw on USA Network, he says it's probably about 356 million, which I think what I've done charts, I put it at about 350. So yeah, that seems right to me.
I found it very interesting. There's a portion in this where it does talk about the value of SmackDown to the USA Network. And it's not so much in just like the ad revenue that they can derive from this. There's, you know, they're paying them $287 million a year average for the next 5 years for SmackDown. But they believe that SmackDown is a primary driver of USA Network's roughly $2 month average subscriber fee, which would be, you know, certainly the impetus behind NBC Universal wanting to stay in the WWE business, but not having the ability to retain the rights to Raw.
I think that's very believable. When you look at, and the reason why I've started to do this chart as part of my reports that I put out for every episode of whatever Raw, SmackDown, Dynamite, Collision is here's everything that we can get from the USA Network based on what Programming Insider is reporting. Here's all the ratings that we have. Now, I know it's prime time, but that's prime time. It's the best time to air stuff. And what you can see, if people are watching a video, you can see these little green dots is everything else. Mm-hmm. And the blue dots are SmackDown. The red dots are Raw when it was on the USA Network. The gray dots are NXT when it was on USA Network. And there's, and I know there's a lot of rerun programming that doesn't cost very much to just put on the air. But in terms of original programming, there's nothing that comes close to what WWE does. So in other words, it makes a lot of sense that if you're getting cable companies to pay X number of dollars per subscriber just to have the right to have USA Network on there, well, what are they paying for? They're paying for, more than anything else, the most watched content. And by far the most watched content, at least, you know, at least among anything that's first run, is SmackDown.
Yeah, and like so often, it's very easy to just to look at the week-to-week numbers, and you look at something like SmackDown from Friday. It does a 0.37, and it's number one on television. And yes, we can focus on, you know, a 0.37. Like, that is nothing that, you know, you would be celebrating a year or two ago, but we're not talking about a year or two ago in the current climate of this diminishing asset that is cable. The people that are maintaining cable, they are watching SmackDown. It's a priority for them to keep the USA Network. And as I've likened it in the past, it's like comparing a baseball team to, you know, a year ago, it took 110 wins to clinch the AL East. Well, this year, the teams are, there's a lot more parity, and you only need 90 wins to win the division. It's like, it doesn't disqualify the fact that you're still a playoff team, but the teams are a lot less competitive than a year ago. I don't need to get 110 wins. I only need 90, and I'm in first place.
Yeah.
How do you like that analogy, Brandon?
Everybody's getting shorter and weaker, and so it's more impressive to hit home, you know, fewer home runs or something like that. Everybody's off the steroids now, and you know, there's only a few home runs being hit, and so you can still lead the league, you know, even in that case.
Perfect comparison. So, I found that to be a very interesting aspect as it relates to SmackDown. They also focus a little bit on NXT here, that, you know, they're getting about $25 million a year. So $125 million over the life of this deal that runs through the third quarter of 2029. So SmackDown and NXT will be up at the same time in 2029. So in theory, they could be negotiating those rights together in a couple of years. But the value with NXT is the audience that it is delivering versus the amount that CW is spending. Like, it's a very low cost per hour that they are getting this audience. And NXT's audience is a great asset to CW and their level of viewership. Like, it's a ridiculous comparison they have of where CW is in that time slot over a year ago, because I imagine what was ever in NXT's spot on Tuesday nights at 8 was a minuscule audience that NXT.
I can show you the same chart for NXT and CW. Here's all the green dots. They're just in another tier, and NXT is in this other tier way above. There's this middle space that's just white. There's just nothing in between. Everything else on prime time, and this would include reruns and everything because it's broadcast. So we have a more complete view of what's on prime time in CW because it's a broadcast network. And there's just, you know, there's a few things, a movie, I don't know. Another movie that they aired, a couple movies that come close. Pac-12 football on September 20th, 2024 did a 0.12. And that's the only thing. Well, there's a few others here. What else is here? NXT off time slot. Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl. That did a 1.4. And a NASCAR Xfinity race, which is kind of like the NXT of NASCAR. But, you know, these numbers for NXT where they're doing like in the teens for a demo rating, it's well above what anything else is doing on CW.
Yeah, there was a little bit just on the ad revenue that these shows are able to generate. I mean, for those curious, for the average ad spot on USA Network costs about $22,500.
Yes. Can we run an ad on there, you think?
Maybe we should do a Patreon incentive, okay? We'll raise funds to run a Pollock and Thurston ad on the USA Network.
We could at least probably, you know, scrape together to run a local ad, maybe in the Buffalo, Toronto area.
Yes. And then the last bit here with the subheading, AEW won the Wednesday night battle.
They talk about AEW in here too? Is AEW a publicly traded company?
So tribal here. They won the battle, but they lost the war.
So this is, I think it's interesting to think about when, you know, it's one thing for us who are so inundated in wrestling talk and wrestling fans and tribalism and other stupidity. And I can already hear the AEW fans saying, well, this stock analyst who covers TKO is obviously biased, and he's obviously been brainwashed with all the WWE propaganda, and he knows to hate AEW. I doubt it. And I would say, what is his characterization of AEW.
Let's read some of this. So, AEW was officially launched in January of 2019. I'll skim through this. A lot of this is just background on, on the company itself. But then they get into Dynamite launching on Wednesdays. Not to be outdone, the next month, WWE announced an agreement with NBCU for NXT, at the time exclusive on the WWE Network, to be carried as a two-hour telecast on Wednesdays, thus beginning the Wednesday Night Wars, explaining that this name comes from the Monday Night Wars, or WWE's head-to-head battle with the now-defunct promotion WCW. A subsequent multi-year agreement between NBCU and WWE saw NXT move to Tuesdays on the USA Network in 2021, thus ending the head-to-head battle. As highlighted, Dynamite held a consistent lead on NXT in terms of viewers and P18 to 49 ratings over the Wednesday Night Wars period. The gap widened after Dynamite moved to TBS in January 2022, which prevented preemptions from the NBA playoffs. Starting in mid-2023, though, audiences for AEW began to decline and have remained on a downward trajectory since, with NXT outdrawing Dynamite by approximately 100,000 viewers since a move to the CW. We believe AEW's challenges can be attributed to a number of factors, including relative creative management, the move of key talent to WWE, in parentheses, Cody Rhodes and Phil, the dilution of audiences after the launch of a second and third show, reflecting the viewership pressures. In December, AEW ended production of Rampage, a Friday night program. But then does go on to state that they did sign their renewal with WBD, reportedly for 3 years at an average annual value of $185 million with an option for a fourth-year pickup.
So the $185 million number, which is the number reported by Variety, Sports Business Journal has reported $170 at the time. But yes, the $185 million is a number that's been reported a number of places. Is this true that the demo is now for NXT is now higher? Sometimes it is. They're really neck and neck lately. Like, for example, most recently, 1.6 for NXT last week, 1.6 for Dynamite last week. The week before that, Dynamite edged out NXT in the demo, 16-15. The week before that, it was the other way around. NXT edged out Dynamite, 15-16. And it's been more consistent, as you can see here, in terms of total viewership. Helps be on broadcast, but nonetheless, NXT is since CW, it's been a little different, but NXT has really increased its viewership and seems to have really genuinely increased its popularity. Meanwhile, at the same time, until the last several months, as we mentioned a little while ago, AEW Dynamite and AEW in general have declined a bit. What do you make of this? Reflecting viewership pressures, in December, AEW ended production of Rampage, a Friday night program. That's sort of being positioned as, hey, look, the viewership hasn't been great, and they got rid of one of their shows.
First of all, I think it's overall been a positive for AEW having one less program. But I think this was a case of, like, they don't mention it here, but there was also the dropping of the Battle of the Belts quietly as well. Like, those specials have also gone away in the new deal. So, I mean, I think it's fair to look at WBD, looking at what were the hours on the table that they could have taken, and they decided to not go ahead with Rampage or the Battle of the Belts specials and not just fill up their programming, even though, you know, they could draw, you know, decent audiences for these, but not enough that it would be worth it for them to up the value of the deal for them.
And we believe AEW's challenges can be attributed to a number of factors, including relative creative management. What does that mean? I like that. I like that.
That sounds like the Young Bucks' new finishing maneuver.
I like that corporatization, euphemization of, Vince is gone and the creative's gotten better for WWE, and people are more interested in it because of that. And I think AEW had creative challenges at the same time. The move of key talent to WWE, Cody Rhodes and CM Punk, yes.
Not wrong.
And the dilution of audiences after the launch of second and third show.
I don't think the launch of Rampage had any pressures on AEW's audience. That was August 2021, and that coincided with the arrival. CM Punk debuts on the second Rampage, and AEW goes through its best period during that summer and into the fall. I don't think Rampage had any negative impact when it was launched. With Collision, you can argue that additional 2 hours, did it siphon off a bit of the audience on Dynamite? I think you can make a bit of that argument if you choose. And I think, you know, Cody Rhodes leaving ended up being, I think it was a big deal at the time, but far bigger than I think even people anticipated his departure was going to have. Not just a loss for AEW, but such a boon for WWE to position him in such a high fashion. And with Punk, I mean, there was just so much residual damage done in the wake of his departure. And again, also being a big asset to WWE. Like, these are arguably your two top baby faces, and throw in Roman Reigns there, and two of them coming from AEW.
Big oversight here, though, does not mention the re-airing of the all-in security footage.
That you're sure that's not on the next page? No, it's not. That was not mentioned here.
But Cody and Punk did go, and now they're, you know, they're fulfilling their social responsibilities in Riyadh and Jeddah.
And yes, that is right. Cody commented on Saudi Arabia this week.
I heard that he did. I heard that he did. Yes. You know,
Are you responsible for this gotcha culture?
I'm totally responsible for this gotcha culture where everybody wants to just find out what your political leanings are and then punish you for it, cancel you for it. That's what it's really about. It's not about all this stuff about killing journalists or, you know, making sure that women have permission before they can be married or divorced. That's not what this is about. Okay. It's about just trying to score points on social media. And that's all you should really, you know, view this as. You should not view it as, you know, a discussion about human rights. You should just view it as, you know, a social responsibility to get paid $50 million directly from a government that sometimes kills its journalists. And, you know, and just it's changing the world and giving entertainment to people around the world, wherever they go. And sometimes they just get paid, you know, two or three times a WrestleMania gate for it.
Did he also not state that this company is apolitical?
He did. It's apolitical.
What is this apolitical company going to be doing next 4th of July?
Does Cody remember the time that he attended Fort Bragg along with Tiffany Stratton and the Street Profits, and it accidentally turned into a Trump rally and the use of uniformed military personnel to assert partisan politics?
Listen, if the General Entertainment Authority said tomorrow, you know what, guys, our cash is kind of strapped, we got to end this deal, WWE would still bring this product.
They still have
to all of these fans. Okay, they would still go because of the fans, just like they stated. Okay,
right. I'm not sure what the talking point is yet on why we're canceling so many house shows in smaller markets, but maybe the there's just not enough of a social responsibility to go to, you know, to go to North Little Rock or you know, Fargo, North Dakota.
Yeah. Well, you can also have a smile on your face watching on your tablet.
Yes.
You don't have to be in person. To smile.
It's still.
All right. Very interesting breakdown here of AEW. Well, not so much the AEW is kind of just inserted here at the end, but a whole breakdown here of WWE and UFC, where we can also mention that Dana White was on one of his favorite podcasts, the Full Send podcast, where he is intimating, he says nothing official yet, nothing to confirm, nothing to announce, but we could be on, you know, pretty much stating we could be on a much more global platform. Could be on multiple platforms in this next TV rights cycle. And then one of the hosts just goes, man, Netflix is pretty global, man. That'd be crazy if you were on there. And Dana just like laughs at it. So, I mean, this coming after Bella Bajaria attended the last UFC event. So, I mean, that is where things are pointed toward. We will see. Where will this White House event stream, Brandon?
I don't know.
What are your tax dollars going to bring you? Are you going to have to buy this on pay-per-view?
It is funny that a couple weeks ago I said this would be like if, you know, with the whatabouts about what about the United States, that you could say it does a lot of, you know, human rights abuses. Well, this would be like if there was a wrestling company that was, you know, doing a show to promote the incumbent presidential administration. And then like days later.
Why didn't we think of this? Why haven't we done this?
more evidence that Mark Spear was listening.
It will be very interesting for an event like that. I don't doubt there will absolutely be WWE representation at this. Like, it sounds like it's going to be by invite only. And I think for sure.
So I can't buy a ticket to this?
No, I don't think so. Dana said they're going to have to do background checks on everybody, which is going to take up a lot of resources. So maybe that will be the reunion. Maybe Elon and Donald Trump will come together to watch a UFC event together by next July.
Hopefully.
And what happens? Donald Trump gets in the ring to announce the winner and then reveals the Epstein files.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into politics here and start talking about the Epstein files.
I do. I like to make things political all the time. I like to push that button with people. All right, let's chat about a few more topics here this week. You know, we should get this particular portion of the show sponsored for Brandon, but it's our legal updates. We have case updates. Wesley Isold, more in the Grant lawsuit. What can you tell us, Brandon?
We have minor things that I've not written articles about.
Oh yeah, the Kevin Kelly did. Tate twins.
So the this thumbnail is flashing. Kevin Kelly and the Tates have. They want an appeal. They want to go to the federal appeals court, which is something that you can do when you're in a district court, federal court, which is where all these, a lot of these cases that we talk about, including this one, are. They're at the basic federal court district level. And when you get a decision from a judge that you don't like, as these plaintiffs, Kevin Kelly and the Tate twins, now not Andrew Tate and his brother. This is Brandon Tate and Brent Tate. They're appealing the arbitration decision that has apparently sent this case to arbitration. I don't know if anything has transpired or if arbitration has even started. I think it's possible that arbitration has not started, given they want an appeal. Maybe there needs to be an appeal decision before arbitration will start, but who knows? So there was a filing that transmitted the materials here. So I don't think they have to jump through any hurdles here to get an appeal, you know, accepted or anything like that. The appeals court above this court will take a look at it. As we discussed before, these three former AEW talents have arbitration clauses in their contracts, and there's a ton of federal precedent to say, hey, when there's arbitration clause, you've got to show that you were deceived specific to the arbitration clause. This judge found the arguments that the plaintiffs were making to be too general. That's not to say that there aren't issues with employee contractor misclassification happening in this company and other companies. But there's a lot of case law to support that when you've got an arbitration clause, it's really hard to overcome it, which is an issue coming to head in the Grant case as well.
That will be your legal scholarly book, arbitration in pro wrestling.
It sounds like a hot seller to me.
I think so. What else do you have on the legal front? Where are we with old Wesley Isold?
Do you remember this case? Yeah. Wesley Isold, who's a famous punk rock musician, would you say? What kind of musician is he? I'm just a guy.
American Nightmare. Talks about law.
Well, American Nightmare is like one of his smaller projects, right? In any case, he's been doing the American Nightmare band since the late 90s. He did tour fairly recently in recent years. So there's this dispute over the American Nightmare name when Cody was with AEW and he trademarked this American Nightmare name, there was some pushback from Wesley Isold, and they came to this agreement, I believe for $60,000 cash Wesley Isold got from Cody, and they agreed that, okay, you can use the American Nightmare name, but when you use it on apparel, you've got to have wrestling. You got to have wrestling indicia, and it's got to be at least 75% the size of the American Nightmare name on the apparel. So you got to have a W logo or an AEW logo or the name Cody Rhodes or your likeness, your face. So there's not much of an update here, except for this case was delayed for a long time, I think, including because of the California fires and because there were some amendments to this lawsuit for technical reasons. But I have made some slides here we can look at. These are not items that they're pointing to in the lawsuit. Let's show an item that they are pointing to in the lawsuit, which is who is this animal here to you?
Is that Pharaoh?
You read ahead, though. You're already spoiled. Again, with the spoilers. So I don't know. I guess I would ask the listeners, like, does this just like obviously look like Pharaoh to you? I'm sorry, people are listening in audio only, but it looks like a wolf, and I know he's a husky.
Yeah.
But it's not super obvious to me that I'd be like, oh yeah, that's Pharaoh. I don't know. It's just a cool looking wolf person. And then
if you didn't know that he has a dog, I can understand. Like, this does not look like his dog. It's just you associate the animal with Cody if you've.
So what we've got here is a black wrestling shirt, and it says American Nightmare underneath this dog head or wolf head, and then there's a skull that's kind of like the tattoo logo. In any case, this is one of the items that they point to say that, look, this is not there's no wrestling indicia here to make it clear that this is a shirt that's not for the American Nightmare band. This is an American Nightmare Cody Rhodes shirt. And I do see, you know, there's a little W logo here on the sleeve. That's definitely not 75% the size. You would have to argue that this skull is somehow wrestling indicia, which I think is a stretch.
I also can't imagine anyone wearing that out in public beyond a wrestling show. So I don't know if this would ever collide with the band fans.
And there are a number of other items, but I think they meet the settlement just based on my lay reading. In any case, you can look at, though, W Shop right now.
This is from the band, right? The band put out the weightlifting belts?
They did not put out the weightlifting belt, but you can see American Nightmare, and you got the Cody Rhodes logo here, the thing that's tattooed on his neck, and the thing that's tattooed on his neck, which is itself a trademark. Uh-huh. He does have this registered, so I think it's fair to call this wrestling indicia, let's say, but it's still like only 61% the size of the American Nightmare text here. And again, this is stuff you can buy right now. This is an ad for W Shop. You can buy this stuff right now, I think, you could over the weekend anyway when I was making this. And then the same for this windbreaker zip up where you got the logo, but it's pretty small compared to what's on the back, which is big American Nightmare text. And if you look at a lot of the other Cody Rhodes merchandise that's for sale right now, you'll find it's almost as if they've made this merchandise now with this, you know, settlement in mind, where you'll either have Nightmare without American, so it just says Nightmare, so it's probably not relevant to this settlement. Or there's like a Cody Rhodes face on it, or it says Cody Rhodes, or the American Nightmare text is small. So the rest of these. But it's just remarkable to me that Icehold is raising like six items. About five of them seem like they meet the conditions of the settlement. To me, I could be wrong. One of them looks like it doesn't. But there's also two items that look really questionable to me that they're selling right now at shop.w.com.
Well, on that front, maybe they'll push their luck. Maybe Cody will host a concert for one of these PLE
weekends. Maybe Wesley Icehold will do, as part of the settlement of this lawsuit, maybe Wesley Icehold will agree to do a live WrestleMania entrance next year.
Okay, that's very possible. Yeah, get rid of Downstate and bring in Wesley Icehold and an American Nightmare reunion.
Yeah. Let's do a cover.
Vegas. I feel this will ultimately get settled in a probably quiet, disclosed fashion. But we'll see.
Yeah, what's new here is that the delays because of the fires and because of other technical issues. This case is now, the wheels are spinning again. And in Grant Kolker, they're still in dispute about whether or not a hearing is needed for discovery to start. Remember, Janelle Grant, former W employee, wants all these records from Dr. Kolker, wants to depose Dr. Kolker, wants all communications between Kolker and Vince McMahon, between Kolker and WWE. They've got a schedule that they've proposed, which the earliest date on it is July 18th. That's 2 days from now. So maybe we'll get a decision from the judge here to clarify just what's going on with discovery in this case, in the state level case.
We have a pair of super chats that we're going to get to here. The first one, more of a reflection here. Andrew Brown, which fighter will lose by heat exhaustion? Yeah, I guess doing an outdoor show, they will have to prepare for maybe like a canopy or something. I'm sure they will put a lot of planning into this because, this could be like a 7-hour outdoor event at the White House. What if it rains?
And what if it rains?
Yeah, it does rain in the U.S. All right. Jumanji Hunter, do you still believe that broadcast has a considerable advantage over cable? Saturday night's main event on NBC, NXT on CW, but SmackDown's decrease is huge. Broadcast is under 20% for the first time for the past year, according to Nielsen.
Thank you for the question. I think your question answers your question, right? Like, SmackDown is down so much from going from Fox broadcast to USA Network. It's down a lot, and we're almost at that, the 1 year marks that they've been back on USA Network. And it's a huge decrease in viewership. I think profile of the network apparently means a lot too, because NXT went from pretty high profile cable network in USA to low profile broadcast network in CW. And the total viewership has been pretty similar. The demo is down. As I believe one Jumanji Hunter pointed out earlier in the chat, it is down in the demo. Broadcast is holding up better, I think, especially when it comes to live stuff, especially when it comes to sports. You know, I mean, we're still seeing, you know, such and such sport, you know, had its highest audience in a ton of years, which of course all these years go across the timing in which you know, cable has declined. So,
I mean, as we looked more towards the renewal for the PLEs as well, you know, that's, you know, their most valuable content, and I think that's going to give you a great insight into what Netflix rather sees as, you know, what they have gleaned from WWE in terms of the biggest shows being the platform that we're ultimately going to be able to host. Like, that seems much more in line with Netflix wanting to go after a lot of like big event style events to be able to promote.
I love event styled events.
Yeah. Big event styles. Any rumors on the next PLE coming to Toronto? No. AEW All Out is the next PLE in Toronto.
Do you think, I guess, the question that I think is on people's minds of late is, you know, how does Netflix really feel about these Raw numbers that they're putting up? Because we did just, I mean, this most recent number that we got for the July 7th episode did, I believe, 2.7 million global views coming after a week where they did 2.6, which is the lowest number to date. I'm estimating that it's down moderately year over year. Others are estimating it's doing far worse.
They did 2.6 this a week ago Monday, 5.1 million hours viewed. So it was up from 2.5 the week before. But yeah, this is generally the range we're getting. It's like 3 million is kind of on the high end now of what Raw does.
So what I'm getting at is if Netflix ends up taking these PLE rights, it tells you they're happy enough with how Raw and the rest of the content internationally is doing that they're willing to buy more, and they see value in having more of it together that they can sell in bundle or whatever. I tend to think these are okay numbers for them.
I do too. I mean, it's still very early in the whole, nobody believed that week one was going to be an attainable level that they were going to stay at. The question is, kind of, you know, once you get to that US number, like obviously there was going to be some drop off. Are they happy with that? It routinely ranks in the top 10. It's weekly programming. Like, if you are a WWE fan, you need to have Netflix. Like, there is not the idea of just, if you're just here for wrestling, you're not going to be, you know, picking up the streamer just for a month here or there. Like, you pretty much need to have it in order to follow like the A show on a weekly basis. And you add, now the question becomes, like, you grab the PLEs, like, are you almost ensuring, like, that what more value is Raw when you've got the big premium live events every month? Like, you already have those people that you would be hoping to expand your base by adding the premium live events with. Like, are you just supplementing an audience that's already there for you?
I think the at least one factor is you can sell an advertiser not only ad time during Raw, but ad time during this hopefully highly viewed PLE. Mm-hmm. Like that there's a ad strategy there. But I get the point that, you know, you only need so much WWE content to get and retain the WWE subscriber.
All right, on that note, we're going to sign off, but thank you to everybody for tuning in to this week's edition of Pollock and Thurston, as we have hopefully brought you all up to date. Brandon, is there anything in the pipeline that you are working on?
Nothing to speak of at this time.
Okay. Will you be entering the G1 Climax contest at Post Wrestling, which is
I was hoping it would still be happening. Is it happening?
Yes, we are. The contest, the deadline is coming up Thursday night at 11:59 Eastern. So get up by midnight Eastern Thursday night. It's free to enter. You have to make your picks for all of the tournament matches. PostWrestling.com/G1 for your chance to become the winner. Can you outbook Ghetto in this tournament as the G1 kicks off this weekend for the next month?
I am a former G1 contest champion, so
I think you have to defend your honor here in this G1 contest. So there you go. You can sign up again by Thursday night at midnight, postwrestling.com/G1. So look out for that. And then tonight I'm back with Wei Ting right after Dynamite, the fallout from all in Texas as they kick off their residency at the Aragon Ballroom. We are here each and every Wednesday, 1 p.m. Eastern time on the WrestleNomics and Post-Wrestling channels. And you can follow Brandon's work, patreon.com/WrestleNomics, or subscribe to WrestleNomics on Substack as well. And then you can be on top of everything. You can know what the AAV is of every pro wrestling piece of content out there. And you can be that much
get
more.
Get those market-to-market comparisons. You'll get the average tickets distributed for each quarter by each event type. YouTube breakdowns for each episode. All those charts we were looking at earlier are in every report for Raw, SmackDown, NXT, Dynamite, Collision.
It's just what it is. I mean, it's an eat-what-you-kill world.
And eat what you kill world. And then on that note, we say goodbye and we'll chat with you next Wednesday here on Pollock and Thurston.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.